You guys are crewing up? Let's do this.
Girls, what y'all trying to do? 24 karat magic in the air. Head to toe so bare. Look out.
Good morning and welcome in here on a Thursday. It is Chuck and Buck in the Morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. Bucky Jacobson's here. My name is Chuck Powell. Matt Slickhawk Nicholas and Niner Nate with you on this Thursday, where Rick Neueisel will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Greg Bell at 7 o'clock. It's our roundtable, 12-man roundtable. Every Thursday at 8 o'clock, we'll also play Fast Money with Randy Cross, former San Francisco 49ers center Randy Cross, in anticipation of this week's 49ers-Seahawks matchup. Wasn't a rivalry back when Randy Cross played.
No. I remember him. I think he was a center on one of the Super Bowls that the Broncos got killed in. Pretty sure. Yeah. Pretty sure that I remember that.
One of the Super Bowls that we got killed in.
Yep. They had a couple. They had a couple there. It was, you get all excited. Super Bowl Sunday's rolling around. And one of them was, against Montana. 80-yard bomb, remember Elway, to start the game. And then I think they lost 49-7.
Oh, there was a time where the NFC was so dominant over the AFC that there was about a, 10-year stretch where the Super Bowl was a laughingstock.
Yeah, and I think three of those was me getting to cry into my my nacho dip.
I mean, that was the running joke as a as a kid. It was like, how big's the spread going to be this year? 40? Mm-hmm. What are they going to win by?
Yeah, it was really enjoyable.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't just you.
I cried.
There were a lot of teams that got dominated there for a little while.
Yeah. So I'm just
back when the 49ers were good. Remember that? Remember that?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, man. There was a hit. Try to stretch your imagination on this one. There was a time where the San Francisco 49ers were really good.
They were good.
Like the best thing ever.
That's a long time ago.
Why do you tell me these lies?
Yeah. I feel bad for people that are young and are just now becoming huge fans of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you missed all the great 49er football.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's coincidence. That's part of it.
That's maybe just poor timing.
Poor timing.
Yep.
Well, welcome into the show. We got a lot to cover today. And I guess it's just a mystery to me. I forgot my pass today to get into the building.
Oh. I know that. And I know this.
If you forget, I mean, it's on me.
Right.
I realize that. At the very heart of it's on me. So I can lay some blame. I mean, Unicorn keeps moving my pass, I know, to get in here.
Well, that's fun.
But at 4 o'clock in the morning, I've already thrown myself on this spear.
Right.
I just can't remember everything. If it's not right there for me, I'm not going to remember it every day.
Right.
So, and I may have even moved it. Probably shouldn't even throw her under the bus whatsoever. I take all the blame. But it is a mystery to me that I could be sitting down there with five morning shows on the same floor. Five of them.
And not at one
iHeart
person
here.
Comes in.
And not one person in 40 minutes shows up for work. From 5 to 5:40, not one person arrives here for work so that I could ask them to get in. So I have to ask some girl on the third floor, hey, could you do me a favor and let me in? And I'm Chuck Powell. I do a sports radio show on the fourth floor for iHeart and blah, blah. And who would make that up? She goes, sorry, dude, can't let you in.
I don't know how well I would have done it. That wouldn't have went over very well with me.
It didn't go over well, but, in today's day and age, you got to rise above.
I guess.
And so I walked off, and she kept saying, sorry, dude. And I might have dropped an expletive, but that's as far as it went. But, that is just a mystery. And
that
by the way,
surprising.
Here's what's funny about it. Right before you showed up, seven people drove in that were at the light, and not a single one of them apparently was coming in the building.
No, They all parked over in their.
I don't know where they went. Because I got it. Because you saw me. You saw me standing outside the building, forlorn.
Right.
They didn't all go into the garage.
Six went into the garage. I don't know where the seventh car went, but they all like scattered. I just assumed somebody was going to be there. The only one I ran into was third floor pink hair bitch.
Uh-huh.
I mean, girl, dump that. And so I ended up being stranded outside, and there you were to my rescue.
Well,
but a little bit too late.
Yeah, rescue with 20 minutes to spare. That's not quite enough prep for the show.
Well, I don't. I feel naked.
Well,
like I don't even know what to talk about. Right?
I got you.
We're the only show that doesn't use the garage. So everybody probably came in and just went into the garage.
Huh. Nobody went into the garage. Huh. Three different times I got out of my car and went into the garage, and they were gone. There was nobody there. They must have parked on the bottom floor, or is there a second floor? Is there a basement floor?
Oh, yeah, there's something below and above.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, it was not fun.
No.
It was bad.
Well,
was bad
I got morning. You, dude. I'm used to, you and me. Yeah. I carry the show a lot of times anyway.
Yeah. Well, okay. Go ahead and do it then. Go ahead. I'd literally like to go home.
I'd have no idea.
I'd like to go home right now. Yeah. I mean, it's all on me. Don't forget your stupid pass, idiot.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll forget mine one of these days. And I probably will just go home.
I forget it too.
Why don't you just leave it in your car?
I do sometimes, but not every time. Sometimes I wear it around my neck so I don't forget it. When I'm here, so it's always right there. But sometimes at four, when you're waking up at 3:30 in the morning on 2 hours of sleep,
yeah,
you don't realize I don't have it.
A little bit more going on in his brain than probably what you're prepping for.
Not
too.
To toot my own horn, but I've never forgotten my pass. Every time Slickcock forgets his, I give him mine.
Okay. How many ideas have you brought for the show in your 9 months of being here?
Awkward.
Awkward.
All right, you have one thing to remember on your way to the show, your pass.
That's it. That's funny. Yeah, you got a little bit more on your plate.
Anyway, I'm going to calm down. I'm going to get in a good mood.
Okay.
I'm angry at my core, but we've got some sports things to talk about. I got to shove it aside.
Okay.
I just didn't want to not expose the elephant in the room.
Well, I like it.
Yeah.
I like letting it out.
All right. So we have 12 Days of Christmas today. We're playing that song. When do we play that?
That's up to you. I was going to ask you that.
So we play it once during the show. Is that the idea?
Once or twice.
We could even do it twice if we really wanted to.
And we take a 12th caller.
Yep.
And that caller wins a $100 gift certificate.
To Twin Peaks.
To Twin Peaks. Okay. So that's the deal there. I know I have a one sheet around here somewhere, but I didn't get to prep this morning, so I'll find that during the break. So that's coming up at some point during the course of the show, but our little 12 Days of Christmas song that we put together as a staff, we got that today.
Okay.
We also got a special thing, special announcement at 8 o'clock today, so that's coming up. And then, of course, we will talk about some of the big topics of the day in the sports world. And maybe the biggest of them all is a national one. I mean, this Thursday night football, last Thursday night football game is tonight.
This is the last one?
Yeah, last one of the season. At least that's what Florio said. I didn't, because I was sitting in my car for 45 minutes and got to listen.
Because Saturday football starts this week.
Yeah, Saturday starts this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is the only week for Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
This is the only week that'll happen?
Only week that will happen.
I only get 1 week. Okay.
Yeah. But Chargers-Chiefs is huge.
Yeah, it is. I'm excited. Well, actually,
what a great way to finish the Thursday schedule. And by the way, this was an improved Thursday night schedule. I mean, we were just talking about the Super Bowl used to be lopsided. Thursday night football is historically lopsided. Ever since they started this thing, ever since they lit this firecracker. This has been widely criticized. You're not giving us good matchups. They're always terrible games. You're trying to lure us in with fantasy football and gaudy uniforms. And yes, it's working. Shut up. Stop reminding us, NFL.
We watch.
But nevertheless, it is something that has improved this year greatly. They've had better matchups, which they went out of their way to do. And they've had better games because of it. And it hasn't been the story. I mean, let's face it. I don't think they should be playing Thursday night football. I think that it's a dangerous enough sport. There's enough exposure. I mean, you're getting good enough. You're making a lot of money NFL, I don't think that you need to put your players at risk any more than you have to for a little extra. And so I have a problem with Thursday night football, but you haven't heard nearly as many complaints, have you, from talk radio hosts or from fans or anything else about Thursday night football and how they shouldn't play it this year because it's been entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're throwing a bunch of Buffalo-Cleveland games out there, which nowadays, actually, they have two quarterbacks, I'd probably watch that game for sure, but yeah, if you're throwing a bunch of those out there, you're kind of losing even though you're saturating the market. So I agree. They've done a better job because last week kind of was a stinker, wasn't it? Tennessee blew out somebody, but still, there was a couple good things to watch on that one.
Jacksonville. That's going to happen, though. We got to thank our friends at Fox for that. I mean, for ponying up the cash and then demanding, hey, if we're going to do this, we're going to get better matchups. You realize they paid $3.3 billion for 5 years of Thursday Night Football?
Jeez.
Maybe that's why the players shut up about it. Maybe the league was like, hey, we got all this money coming in. You're going to end up getting 40 to 50% of that. So,
yeah, the players haven't even been talking about it as much.
Yeah, haven't heard anything.
And maybe that's why. I mean, maybe there was a meeting somewhere where they're like, hey, here's a bunch more money that you guys are getting.
So they added $3.3 billion, and yet the story earlier this week was that the payroll's going to go up like $6 million. $6 million of $3.3 billion.
Wow.
Is that a small or large percentage?
I think I'm not the best at math, but I think the billion is a big number. Millions of still is a big number.
And
too,
if you have multiple billions?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a small percentage for those keeping score at home. We are already to Thursday, which seems incredible. The work week in sports talk radio shrinks dramatically when you have a Monday night football game. And so we're already to previewing 49ers and Hawks, so we'll be doing a lot of that coming up a little bit later on in the show. We got winter meetings that are getting ready to wrap up, and man, have they been ice cold. There just hasn't been that much activity going on with the winter meetings this week. There have been a few free agent signings. I think the expectation was that the free agent signings would happen later, just as they did a year ago, and that we would have some trade activity this week. But there's been very little, next to none to this point. I mean, Jerry made all of his trades before. And, you know, I was thinking about it last night as basically the hosts of MLB Network, their last day together, and they're trying to pull out every trick to try to talk about Manny Machado and Bryce Harper another way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're playing cards. They're throwing darts. I mean, they're
speed tweeting,
juggling cats. I mean, they're trying to fill all of this time talking about Bryce Harper and Manny Machado and Charlie Morton signing yesterday because no trades are going down. And that's what the winter meetings are known for. It's not for signing free agents. It's for you put all the GMs in one town, let them go have dinner somewhere, let them deliberate, and they come away with a trade. Well, in today's game, it's not as easy as what it once was to pull off a trade because in the past, you'd kind of go to your buddy who you used to face because all the GMs used to be players, and they'd bring out a cocktail napkin, they'd draw something up, and then they'd go to their numbers guy, and does this make sense to you? That makes sense to me. And then you'd go get permission from the owner, and you'd pull off a trade.
Right.
Now these nerds are just... they are just fine-tooth combing. I mean, they're pouring over every aspect of it. And then they're taking past trades that have been made. Like, no, this was lopsided. Look at this. This is the kind of trade we're willing to make. And then the other guy's like, well, that was a bad trade. Just because somebody else made a trade and gave up that much for said player doesn't mean that I'm going to do that. I've learned my lesson. I'm paying attention. And so I think Jerry realizes the landscape. And one of the arguments and criticisms that we had of Jerry of all of those trades, that flurry of trades that he made, was that maybe he didn't get enough for James Paxton. Maybe he didn't get enough for Gene Segura. Maybe he didn't get enough for Edwin Diaz. And yet, I think maybe Jerry was like, well, I can sit around and try to pull off seven trades with these fine-tooth combers. Or I can take a little less, get rid of the players I want to get rid of, and target some of the prospects that I want to bring in. And so I think that the fact that he took a little less allowed him to get some things accomplished.
Right.
Because obviously no one else can accomplish a trade anymore. Because it's nerd on nerd.
Yeah. It's
nerd on nerd crime.
And we're the ones that are suffering because of it.
All right. So we'll talk a little bit about the winter meetings and whether or not Carlos Santana will ever wear a Mariner uniform. That's coming up a little bit later on in the show as well. But coming up next, Rick Neuheisel will join us to talk some college football. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Now back to Chuck and Buck on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle's original diehard sports station. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Let's call me.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's call me.
Go back to sleep.
I think I needed that. I think I needed, water trickling on rocks. Maybe some palm fronds being waved in my face.
You know what you need?
A little breeze glow.
You need a little 30-minute session at Breeze Club.
You are absolutely right. Now do you understand the necessity of this product?
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you.
Never start your workday angry, Bucky. Never do.
No. I try not to.
I think there's a winter fresh breeze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are a lot of different things you could do at Breeze Club. You can create the aroma that you want, the temperature that you want, the level of breeze that hits you. Yeah.
I think we should get her done.
Oh. Then you tag team it with the rub center.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. Rub center.
Yeah, the rub center.
Breeze Club and Rub Center?
Yeah, it's called Above the Belt.
Oh, yes. Of course.
Called Above the Belt. And then, you just get back scratches and head rubs.
Oh.
That's it.
Polishing.
Because I would rather have that than, a therapeutic, deep tissue massage. Just give me an old back scratch.
I'm with you.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm a big polish guy.
Underrated.
A big what guy?
Polish. The super light. Fingertip, it's not even a back scratch.
Is that what it's called?
Well, that's what I call it. I don't know what the
polish?
Heck it is. Polishing. Yeah, this guy's polishing. It is. And it's a hereditary thing, because my mother, I can remember my mother as a kid, I'd lay in there, head in her lap or whatever, and just polishing my ear, and I just almost drift off. And now my mom has done this to her grandson, and he will literally goes into a trance. He'll just, and I love it. Polishing. It's literally my favorite thing in the world.
Isn't that the ability to talk to ghosts?
What? That's shining.
No, that's shining. You're right. You're right. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I get into such a trance, I could probably talk to ghosts when I'm doing it.
All right. Well, we're going to be chatting here with Rick Neuheisel a little bit, as we do every Thursday. Talking some college football with the coach, the segment brought to you by Delicatus for the true sandwich lover.
Your home for college football Saturdays is live with CBS sports analyst Rick Neuheisel. Brought to you by Delicatus for the true sandwich lover. After all, there is nothing more disputed than a great sandwich. Their dedication to service, craft, and flavor is unrivaled. Come taste the difference at their two locations in downtown Seattle. Or feed your team with catering from DelicatusSeattle.com. Now, Rick Neuheisel on Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Okay. Coach, you'd rather have a, have you ever heard of polishing?
I have, polishing one's shoes, polishing a table, rich Corinthian leather. What are we polishing today?
Well, I was trying to tell him about the merits of back scratches, and he's like, I prefer polishing. And I'm like, what the hell is polishing? And apparently it's just fingertip, rubbing of one's face and hands.
Oh, yeah. Arms.
Arm. Yeah. Yeah.
Just ever heard of this? Just gentle.
Do you guys need a room? Is there, do we need to create some privacy here?
We got a room. And I don't want to be, I can't be polished by manly hands. No manly hands. It's got to be my wife. Actually, my mom could still get away with it. No manly hand polishing.
Well, I don't know. I've never heard of it until this morning.
Far be it from me to judge another. I just polishing. It sounds good. It sounds exhilarating. There you go.
You'd enjoy it, guaranteed.
You really would enjoy it. How you been? Anyway, you good? You getting ready for the holidays?
I've been fine. I am engrossed in coaching again. I am a Arizona hotshot, and tomorrow,
coach,
to begin a little bit of a mini camp. Only one practice, but they go through all their physicals and stuff, and trying to assemble a staff. As you know, my offensive coordinator Hugh Freeze left to take the Liberty head coaching job. So I'm without a coordinator, so I'm just kind of doing it myself right now. And with all the things going on, I have never had so much fun.
Is that right? Are you exaggerating?
It's really a blast. It's really a blast. I've been out of coaching since 2011 and doing this other stuff, which I've really enjoyed. But getting your hands back in it is I'm polishing the offense is what I'm doing right now. I'm polishing the offense.
I don't know, Coach.
Not really massaging the offense, or
if you're scratching
the offense.
The dough. I would maybe not polishing, maybe more kneading. You know, just where your hands are fully in it, and you've got to make something of this. Yeah.
What do you see as the end result for the league? I mean, what do you think?
I actually think if we do things in the correct form. I was part of a league called the USFL where we went too fast. There was enough interest in football in that time of the year that it could have worked. We had a network that was, putting our games on air, which by the name of ESPN, we had everything we needed. We just had overzealous owners and some owners that hadn't been, vetted nearly well enough, including our own.
Yeah, is one of those our president?
Well, he was. He was one of them right now. And President Trump at that time wanted to use it as a tool to get to the NFL. And so he basically brought this lawsuit, which we won, but we got $3, actually a dollar trebled, which in antitrust litigation, you get three times the damages. So we got a buck, and they made it all the way up to $3. I'm not sure what my slice of the $3 was, but that's what ended up happening. And the league fell short. But I'm telling you, there is plenty enough football players. There's plenty enough coaches. There are plenty enough football fans. And there are networks looking to put it on. As a matter of fact, my boss right now, CBS, is going to air some of these games. So if we can play competitive football, and with the coaches that are in this league, I'm sure that we can. It's going to be fun, and the team and the league that's going to benefit the most is the NFL, because as you guys know, there's a gap between college football and professional football, in particular with offensive linemen and quarterbacks and some other positions. And if you can grow some of those players, it will help the league not only with their draft choices, but it'll also help supply the kind of talent that they're looking for to put on the best possible show. And I think all that's good for football.
It's funny that we've started with this topic, and maybe I shouldn't be spending so much time on it, but I find it fascinating, so I'm going to ask a follow-up question here. I was sitting there, and don't ask me why, Coach, I was thinking about the USFL this morning, but I was thinking about the USFL this morning. And from these terms, correct my history, but didn't, like, Jack Pardee and Mouse Davis and, like, the run and shoot kind of get its start there professionally? It wasn't taken serious as an offense, and the NFL
until Jim Kelly. That's right.
Yeah, and the NFL
Jim Kelly
was like,
and the Houston Gamblers.
Right, and
Jack Pardee was the head coach, and Mouse, and then Mouse and June Jones went to Denver, and the Denver Gold had it, and it was taken legitimately as an NFL possibility. As a matter of fact, June, I think, had it in the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, and the NFL at that time was so stodgy that they would not have considered anything like that. And USFL almost was an opportunity to kind of experiment with some new thoughts offensively. And could this league kind of provide that same opportunity where you guys might be able to experiment with some ideas that you've had that could launch new ideas for the National Football League going forward?
I don't think there's any question. Now, we've got some pretty, you know, advanced minds from the world of NFL offense. Mike Martz is coaching in San Diego, right? Steve Spurrier is in Orlando. Brad is in Atlanta. All those guys have had West Coast type offenses that, fun and gun was the Spurrier mantra. What was the Rams, the, offense called? But it, I mean, obviously, yeah. Fastest show on turf.
Yeah.
You know, they have ways to do things, but there's no question in my mind. I want to bring some of these college RPO principles, but we're seeing it already. The Rams, the Chiefs, the Eagles, who won the Super Bowl a year ago, had already started to branch into this RPO world. But it's all part of football today, and it's all kind of entertaining. I mean, what was better than watching the Rams and the Chiefs on Monday night a few weeks ago put on that kind of show?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there are those that say, give me some defense. And there's plenty of defense that's going to be played. But it was entertaining football, to say the least.
Could Kyler Murray be a successful NFL quarterback?
I'm actually recruiting him right now for the Arizona Hotshots. there is no question Kyler Murray could play at the next level. What I didn't know about Kyler Murray with his brief tenure at Texas A&M was the strength of his arm and the quickness of his arm. It's a unbelievably talented throwing arm. And when they talk about Major League Baseball and with five tools, you know, the throwing arm is one of the five tools. And he rated very high there, and now I can see why.
Mm-hmm.
I've never watched the young man play baseball, but I can imagine he's got amazing gifts, because from 0 to 60, he's probably quicker than fast, but he's plenty fast to get 90 feet down to first base.
Right choice for the Heisman?
He is, and a fabulous choice for the Heisman. Yeah. I mean, the Heisman went to him, and it also went to Lincoln Riley, who now his offense has produced the last two Heisman Trophy winners, both of which were transfer quarterbacks. Neither one of them signed on the dotted line with Oklahoma. They both transferred there, which to me is also an amazing realization that these guys just kind of happened on the scene in Norman, and Norman benefited greatly.
I went on a rant yesterday, and I think Bucky almost hit under the table. I was so angry about it.
Well, he was being polished.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't. I wish, but I was.
But there was a story from The Athletic that suggested that Barry Alvarez and a couple of other, Bob Bowlesby, a couple of other, you know, powerful names behind the scenes.
I saw the article.
Okay.
I saw the article, yes.
So they were saying, not only do we need an 8-team NCAA tournament, this 4th-team thing is not good enough, but we could do it as quickly as next year. And I went on a rant talking about, where are the active college football coaches? Where are the Urban Meyers, Nick Sabans, the biggest names in the sport? They need to stand on their pulpits and start pushing for this thing. But I'll take Barry Alvarez and his group if we can get some progress. But what do you think it would take? I mean, who needs to get involved? What has to happen so that we can get that 8-team tournament that you want, that I want, that Bucky wants, that nearly every college football fan wants?
Listen, the more voices, as you just pointed out, from those that have the stage, that will add to this, the better off we'll be. I have no idea what's in the dried ink on those contracts. I have no idea what this would mean. And at the end of the day, if you and I sat and somebody gave us a little financial expose on what this would mean and how money would either be gained or lost if you went about it quickly, we would find out very early how to silence voices or to get more to join. The ultimate deal here is about the money, but there is no question that college football is suffering because we do not have equal representation from the different regions in the country. The West Coast football fan interest is waning, you went to a Husky game when it was clear that the Huskies weren't going to be in the playoffs, and attendance was down.
Yeah.
We have to give each conference a chance or a slice at the pie. If their team goes into the playoff and gets beat, so be it. But at least the champion of the Pac-12 needs to be in the round robin, as does every other conference, because all conferences, as we know, are not created equal. They don't play the same schedules. Schedules can be manufactured. Nick Saban and Alabama are perfect examples of how to create the perfect schedule. Last year, USC played 11 straight Power 5 opponents without a bye. The most that Alabama has played during Nick Saban's tenure is 5 in 10 years. Now, and this is his 11th. The most is 5. They know when to get a rest, when to build in a softer opponent, and they know, and they can get it done because they have that kind of power and wield that kind of influence. We're never going to have that in this portion of the country because of the costs of the departments, the cost of non-conference games, because of, television deals and so forth. So we shouldn't be penalized because we're having to play an extra conference game and guaranteeing the conference 6 extra losses. We don't know where those losses are going to fall. And when you're being compared to other teams that don't have to play Utah in the penultimate week of the season and yet are playing the Citadel, that doesn't sound fair or equitable. So let's not worry about it. Let's just make more seats at the table when we get to the playoffs. And ultimately, I think we're going to get there. Whether it's 2020, I don't know, but I'm unbelievably encouraged that people like Barry Alvarez and Bob Bowlesby have seen the light and understand that this is absolutely a mandate. Not so that we can get a better champion. I'm not saying that we'll have a different team win, but I will say that there will be interest and recruiting will change, because right now the tables of recruiting have totally swung to those playoff participants that get there on a regular basis.
You're a fan of the Pac-12. I'm a fan of the Pac-12. We're all fans of the Pac-12 conference. But are we starting to worry, get deeply concerned about our seat at the table in major college football, and I would say college basketball as well? Both entities are going through a struggle right now.
I'm an optimist. I'll be an optimist till the day I die. But there is obviously, it's a bad time in history for the Pac-12 relative to the rest of the country. And to further the point, in college football recruiting rankings right now, Washington and Oregon are the top two teams. USC, which has been a bell cow for this conference, especially in football for some time, is 27th in the country in recruiting with 6 days to go before the signing date. That to me is alarming. UCLA is in the 60s. And if we can't get all of our power brokers to start to get back to where we all are comfortable with them being, we have to ask ourselves why. And sometimes it's an individual thing. Sometimes it's a perception thing. Sometimes it's just where we are as a conference. But I know Larry Scott is working very hard. I think he's hearing what's being said, and that now it's going into a think tank to figure out how to fix it.
Are you excited for bowl season?
I am. I hate this. I got to say this. I hate this coaches doing bowl games, on Saturday and having to fly out. Let's use the Vegas Bowl as an example, right? We've got Fresno and Arizona State.
Yeah.
Last year, Mario Cristobal had just gotten the job, and he was in Las Vegas practicing with the team and then would leave on a jet to go recruit and come back and do this every day, and they got their doors blown off by Boise because, not that Boise didn't have the same recruiting deal, but because he was a new coach, he had to do all this stuff. I hate that recruiting is tied into this. I hate that either we need to move the recruiting December recruiting date up so it was yesterday so people can go to the bowl site and actually enjoy it and have some fun with their team. But this multitasking for the coaches has gone to an exponential level, and I don't think that's right. Taking all the fun out of what's supposed to be a time where you're rewarding your team.
Let's finish on a high note, because I called up.
Please.
Let's
polish this segment.
Yes. I called up a college football page on the old internet, and I won't explain which one it is. But right there in front of me, and I just want to get your comments on this. Is there anything more remarkable than Mike Gundy's mullet at age 55? Is that not just special?
Mike Gundy has, there's something that happened, whether it was an electrical storm or you name it. Something happened that he just decided he could do and say whatever he wanted there in his little fiefdom of Stillwater, Oklahoma. Eskimo Joe's gave him some bad, you know, a bad clam. I have no idea, but he has decided he can do a mullet. He can, you know, make noises that sound like somebody's flatulation. He can do whatever he wants. I'm a man. I'm 40. I guess that was the signal moment where he decided I can do whatever I. He wore a wrestling singlet to promote the Oklahoma State wrestling team. He took his shirt off in front of Hank Iba Arena, along with his quarterback, to flex for the home team. I have no idea what's going on with Mike Gundy, but I think we all want more of it.
There you go. We'll end on that note. All right. Thank you, Coach. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Happy holidays.
All right. Same to you. Rick Neuheisel, brought to you by Delicatus for the true sandwich lover. After all, there is nothing better than a great sandwich. Their dedication to service, craft, and flavor is unrivaled. Go taste the difference for yourself at their two locations in downtown Seattle, or you can feed your entire team with catering from DelicatusSeattle.com. All right. Coming up next, another little flirtation by an NBA city about coming to Seattle. Is there any merit to it? We'll discuss. Deceiving me, Bucky, or is Slick Hawk playing the air bells in there?
No. Yeah. That is definitely happening.
Yeah.
I don't even know what set of air bells he's playing. Over the place.
As I've said before, I was the air roadie in our air band back in high school, so I'm not one to judge.
Right.
But if I'm going to be in an air band, I'm going to probably shoot higher than air bell player.
Yeah, that's definitely not where I'm going with it.
Somebody's got to do it, gents. Somebody's got to play
the
bells.
Somebody does have to accept that role. We can't have an air band without somebody playing the bells.
That's right.
Greg Bell now joins us here on the program to talk some Seahawks football. Good morning, Greg.
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Lead singer in your air band? Did you play the bass?
My band, I do whatever I want. So, yeah, I was a lead singer. Look at him. I was everything.
Backup dancer.
You were everything.
Guitar, he was everything.
Bells, cymbals, blocks.
I've given you credit about being very, very talented in everything I've ever seen you do, but if you're going to say you could do everything in your own air band.
I just heard the ultimate thing in my head.
Yeah?
I was an air one-man band.
Yes.
So he had cymbals on his knees.
That's what I was picturing, too. Harmonica around the neck.
Air harmonica.
Air harmonica. Air bass. He had the air axe tied into the back. The mic.
That is I like awesome. A
double guitar.
Perfect. Uh-huh. All right.
Air horn.
Let's talk some Seahawks football.
Yes.
Now that the silliness has been highlighted.
Okay.
All right, Greg. Michael Kendricks. I keep hearing a lot of people say what a huge loss this is. He played like 15 minutes. How big of a loss could this really be?
Well, the Seahawks have seemed like they've always been on borrowed time with him.
Yeah.
First, when they signed him in September, when nobody else wanted to touch him, when he was facing a league suspension for insider trading. They got three games out of him in September, started two of them, and he was really good, as a Super Bowl starter with the Eagles might be. Pete Carroll and the Seahawks loved how seamless the transition from a new team and coming in off the street in September and playing right away, playing a few days after they signed him, because he came from a system just like Seattle's, a 4-3. He was a weak side linebacker, middle linebacker, on the weak side when the play goes away from him. It worked, and it was very easy to do, and it was very convenient for the Seahawks, of course, because K.J. Wright was not coming back from the knee surgery. So he gets suspended for 8 games. He's gone 2 months. Then the NFL does the Seahawks a favor by saying, well, as part of the suspension, you can come back 2 weeks of practice before you play again. The favor in that being that when his first game he was eligible to play, which was Monday night, he was ready to play an entire game because he had been practicing for 2 weeks. So he does that, and then he gets hurt, and knee injury and other injuries that are going to require surgery, out for the year. He played on those injuries through the game, played 44 of 58 snaps. But this whole time, what I just said, all of that had as the background of all that was he has a prison sentence hearing next month in January. Mm-hmm. So all this time it's been, wow, it's a good thing we still have him, or we're fortunate to have him, knowing in the back of their minds that this could all come ending at January at the latest because he was going to be sentenced. Now, there's all the legal people in Eastern Pennsylvania are saying that 2.5 to 3 years is the sentencing guidelines for this type of crime. Most people think he's going to either plead a deal short of that or maybe not get that much, maybe more like months rather than years. So Pete Carroll says 6 to 8 weeks that this it takes to recover from this. And he made an interesting quote yesterday saying that we are looking forward to having him back and come back with us next time. Whatever next time is, the implication being next year, if the prison sentence is only a few months, and all of that means what's up with K.J. Wright, whose contract is ending, who hasn't been back on the field, who has not responded from this knee surgery. He's only played 3 of 13 games. His contract's ending. He's 30 years old, so will be 30 years old before next season. So if they want Kendricks back next year, it hints that maybe K.J. Wright's not in their plans and they're hoping for a shorter prison sentence and have Kendricks be the weak side linebacker going forward.
So as far as the rest of the defense goes, we've talked about McDougal and how well he's played. How else can you just sum up how this defense has kind of came together with all of the guys that they lost last year? I mean, they're playing good football right now.
Well, they're young, which means they're hungry, and they're buying into everything Pete Carroll's selling, and they've got leadership in places that they didn't think they were going to have it. Bradley McDougal, as great as he's been and how long I go on and on about, I feel like it should be his agent for how much I'm saying how great he's playing, but he is. He's also been a leader because he's the most experienced guy in the secondary, and I talked to him yesterday about that, and he said, it wasn't my plan to be this rah-rah guy. I've never been that way. But as he put it, it was sort of hand-delivered to me that I needed to be that. And he saw that once Sherman and Chancellor and Thomas left. He was the last guy who had 6 years of experience in playing NFL football in the secondary. So now he's teaching Trey Flowers and teaching Tedrick Thompson and Delano Hill. And he's able to play free and strong safety, which makes him a wealth of resource for just experience and know-how. Guys like Jerron Reed, who did not have to be a leader because he had Michael Bennett and Sheldon Richardson and Cliff Averill on the defensive line last year. Well, those guys are all gone, and here comes Jerron Reed, is now a third-year veteran who knows more than people who have just got here. I mean, he knows more about the Seahawks way than a guy like Barcavius Mingo, who's been in the league for 6 years, 5 years, but is first with the Seahawks. Frank Clark was not a leader because of the defensive linemen I just mentioned, such as Bennett and Averill. Now he said the other night, it's my team. It's my locker room, in reference to Richard Sherman and his comments. So, and now he has 11 sacks, a career high. So these guys have a little bit of a swagger because now they have a presence. It's their team, and they're playing like it. They're acting like it off the field, and all this chemistry stuff and intangibles is what Pete Carroll has capitalized on his entire tenure, and he's got it back this season.
Greg Bell, our guest every day, he joins us at this time, so this should not be a surprise to anyone. It's brought to you by the Michaels Automotive Group. All right, so, I mean, this has been a terrific season, 8-5. I mean, and I think the nation is turned on, switched on about the Seattle Seahawks this season and the tremendous job that Pete Carroll has done. And you are right there at the tape of kind of finishing off what you started in terms of getting into the playoffs. So I would ask you, is this team at all susceptible to a letdown game? Because it looks like the classic scenario for that.
It does look like that. I thought it was funny yesterday when someone asked Ken Norton Jr., the defensive coordinator, after practice about a trap game. It was actually a Seahawks reporter, which I thought was interesting. A Seahawks team reporter asked Norton that, and Norton said, well, at least on defense, these guys are too young to know what a trap game even means. They didn't even know what that is. And there's some truth to that. These guys, the players that are starting for the first time, they don't know what a trap game is because they're trying to keep their jobs and they're all excited to be on the field playing and starting. That's 8 of 11 guys on defense compared to last year. Guys like Doug Baldwin, Russell Wilson, they could maybe think of that being a trap game. But here's where Pete Carroll's every game's a championship opportunity mantra and not resting players when they have things clinched in previous playoff years. This is when it comes in handy in times like this. So Carroll cannot change his approach. It can be the same it's been for 8 years here, and it'll fit this week. He's not going to treat this week any differently because he never treats any week any differently. So all that rhetoric is coming in handy this week, and I think they realize they have a chance to just stomp a team that's down 3-10 and get this done and be clinched in the playoffs before Christmas, have two games to do whatever they want to do with it. They're still going to play their guys like I talked about yesterday. But I have this feeling that they just don't want to mess around. And they've come from 0-2 and 4-5 and are very fortunate to have things have broken their way in the NFC, that they don't want to screw that up. And I think the fact they just beat this team 43-16 and were leading 20-0 in the first half just 2 weeks ago is actually going to play into their advantage here, to think that we got a team that we should bury early and keep down so we can just end this and be in the playoffs already.
Fluker was hurt last week. Simmons stepped in his place, and they still ran the ball really, really well. So is Fluker still out? And if so, is Simmons going to be the guy, obviously?
Sounds like it. Now, Pete Carroll said yesterday, I'm going to give him a chance to do something special, Fluker, by the end of the week and trying to come back and play. But all signs are it's still going to be Jordan Simmons, and why not? Because the two games that Simmons has started at the Rams, 273 yards rushing, against Minnesota the other night, 214 yards rushing. The only two times they've had 200-plus yards rushing is with Jordan Simmons in at right guard. Now, maybe that's a coincidence, but once could be a guess, and two could be a sensing a trend. And the Seahawks can say Jordan Simmons is starting to hold his own. So that Monday night game against a very strong, talented, star-packed defense gives the Seahawks some time with DJ Fluker. And they can say, well, let's just keep Simmons in there, and we'd rather have Fluker for the playoffs and not for the San Francisco game. So it wouldn't surprise me if Simmons starts again on Sunday.
What about Doug Baldwin? How's he feeling?
He did not practice yesterday. I saw Pete Carroll talking to him before practice began, and Carroll said it wouldn't surprise me if Baldwin tries to pull it off and play. It's a different groin injury than the one he had and played through at Carolina 3 weeks ago, but he hasn't practiced now in 2 weeks. And I could see him trying to go on Sunday, but again, they're in a situation now. They put themselves in a situation where they don't need to rush those type of guys back, and he could miss another game for the better of the playoffs.
All right. Thank you, Greg. You'll be in an hour?
I will.
All right. We'll have a little roundtable discussion and make you go against Hugh Millen head-to-head.
I like Hugh. You're always trying to pit me against Hugh Millen. I really like that. You really know that.
Yeah, I know that. I think you guys get along too well. That's my point. I want the two smart guys to start getting in some fisticuffs every once in a while and build up the drama on this
program.
Yeah.
Fisticuffs on radio. That'd be interesting. All right. Yeah. I'll try to not to do that in an hour. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you then.
See you. Bye.
All right. Greg Bell joining us with a little 12-man news. It's brought to you by the Michaels Automotive Group, a family-owned and operated dealership that places customer satisfaction as its highest priority. They feature three of America's most popular automotive brands, Toyota, Volkswagen, and Subaru, all located at the same location just off I-90 in Eastgate. All right. Coming up next on our show, we are going to, do we announce this? Is it announceable? Are we supposed to designate this or catch people off guard?
No. We can announce it. We can tell them it's coming.
Okay. Do we want to play this thing next?
I think we should.
I want to hear it.
All right. 12 days of Christmas. Oh, boy. the annual spiral into the gutter, which is done by the staff at KJR, forced upon us. Not only do you get to hear the latest version of it, we will also give you a chance at winning a $100 gift certificate from Twin Peaks. Also, we won't spend our entire next 15-minute segment talking about the 12 Days of Christmas, because I want to talk a little bit about Frank Clark as well and what he's doing here for the Seahawks. Sports Radio 950 KJR.